Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Role Watcher podcast. Today, Sam and I are finally going to be discussing our long-awaited episode on the Greek royal family and their long and illustrious history, but also their many connections through the royal houses of Europe, which are equally fascinating.
Yes, and they are probably some of our favorite royal jewels were owned by the Greek royals, so this should look to be an exciting episode.
Definitely. I think let's get started right away by discussing the memorial service held in Windsor at the end of last month for the late King Constantine II of Greece, which not only brought together quite a few members of the British royal family, but also royals from around Europe. And it was for a memorial service held over the year for a former king. It was quite a big royal turnout.
It was. Would you say it was more or less the same amount of royals for his initial funeral, or more so?
I think there's slightly less because that had a lot more kings and queens. This time it had two kings and five queens, which is not a bad turnout at all, but not on that same scale.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it was King Charles was supposed to attend because he couldn't attend, but the initial funeral, and then Prince William had to pull out on the morning. So unfortunately, the main members of the British royal family weren't able to attend, which caused a little bit of a some chatterings in royal circles. But
But still, I think if we move on to the next slide, we'll see that there were quite a lot of guests from around Europe. You can see in the front row here that the extended Greek royal family, Queen Anne Marie, her five children, and at the end over there is Queen Sophia of Spain and Princess Irene, who are Constantine's sisters. And then behind them are their spouses. And then a few rows back, you can see the King and Queen of Spain with King Juan Carlos, Princess Benedicti of Denmark, and Crown Prince Alexander of Serbia, Prince Hassan and Princess Sarwat of Jordan. You have Queen Noor of Jordan and the Baden couple, the Landgrave of Hesse, the Crown Prince of Hanover. So, from the kind of European royal houses, there was a pretty decent turnout there.
it was, and we will of course go into more details, but a lot of these are cousins and very close relations to the Greek royal family.
Of course. And so do remember all these names as we move on. But in the next slide, let's see who turned out from the British royal family. Even though the main cast was more or less out of order, we had Queen Camilla leading the entire royal family, along with Princess Anne and Sir Tim. And Queen Camilla wore a very interesting jewel for the first time, the Queen's Greville ivy leaf clips.
Yes, when were they last seen?
On the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, so slightly over less than 2 years ago. But it's quite an interesting kind of development how much she's been wearing from the Queen's jewelry box, especially nowadays when the royal family is going through kind of so many changes and they're not as visible as they used to be. So her bringing those jewels out is kind of a sign of the stability she's trying to pull from. And then we had quite a lot of the extended members of the royal family. The Kents were all there, and as we'll discuss later, their mother was born a Greek princess, so that makes perfectly good sense. And then we had a bunch of extended members of the royal family, as well as Prince Andrew, who was a bit of a controversial choice.
Yes, and again, we'll get into it. Andrew is named after Prince Philip's father, Prince Andrea. So maybe a little bit full circle there, but yeah, not the most wisest choice for optics reasons, in my opinion. But hey, we're not that
My
kind of program.
grandfather, he is also quite a controversial figure. So, putting it mildly. And I
Putting
think
it
let's
mildly.
to the next slide where we can see the Greek royal family's family tree and how much they've kind of m married into different European royal houses. This we'll revisit this tree in a couple of slides, but I just want to kind of give a brief overview. And then I think in the next slide, we can just discuss the history of the Greek monarchy itself.
And just before we start, I just think this is a perfect illustration of there was a very good line in The Crown. I know it was fictitious, but I thought it was a very good line anyway. When the young Queen Elizabeth is speaking to her grandmother, regarding, you know, the duties of monarchy and what it represents. And the young Queen Elizabeth states that her husband, who was a Greek royal, felt that they were deposed because they did not represent the people. And Queen Mary made the fictional Queen Mary made a snide remark about Philip coming from a royal family of carpetbaggers and parvenus who only lasted 90 years. But as we can see from this slide, in those 90 years, well, they lasted a little bit longer than that, they packed one hell of a dynastic punch.
And I think in that way, we can kind of move on to discussing where the Greek royal family really came from. And the reason why Philip felt they didn't really represent the Greek people was because they originally came from Denmark.
They did. So just a small historical background to the establishment of the Greek royal family. Greece was part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire for a number of centuries. They gained their independence and everyone at the time decided that they needed to have a monarchy because it was only one republic in Europe, and that was France. So they looked around. They initially installed a guy from Bavaria, Otto. He became the king. He ruled for around 30 years, I believe it was. He married a lady called Queen Amalia. They didn't have any children, so he wasn't able to start a dynasty, and he was also very unpopular. So the Greeks got rid of him, and then they went on the hunt for a new king.
And they landed on Tiny Denmark, which was rather an insignificant kingdom, but they had recently gained a bit of prominent attention because Prince Alexander of Denmark had married the Prince of Wales. And when the Greek royal family came to London, the great powers that be decided that a perfect candidate for the new king of Greece would have been Alexandra's younger brother, Prince William, who was then only 17 and a naval cadet.
Yes, and there is the old family story that the royals of Europe like to repeat, that as he went to his naval college, he had some sardine sandwiches that were wrapped in newspaper. And as he unwrapped his sandwiches for his lunch, he learnt from the newspaper that he'd just become the King of Greece.
What a way to find out.
What a way to find out, indeed. I don't know if I think that's true, but it's a nice story.
It really is. But so 17-year-old William was packed off to Greece, and it has always been a turbulent political climate in Greece. And as you'll find out, the monarchy has been a source of stability, but then also a source of strife at times. But Prince William, who took the name King George, did a pretty good job, and soon enough needed to find a wife, and he went to Russia, where his other sister had married the crown prince, and chose Grand Duchess Olga.
Yes, who was a niece or a great niece of the Tsar. But her father was one of the richest men in Russia. He was the Grand Admiral, which meant that just like all the other Grand Duchesses, Olga had a very impressive jewellery collection, which we will go into piece by piece.
Yes, and I think over here we can see that Olga and George had a bunch of children, and their two daughters both married into Russia. So Olga was very keen to maintain those ties to Russia throughout her entire life. And really, she was very much the most popular member of the Greek royal family ever. Even when they were exiled or forced out in later years, Olga was always respected and given treated with utmost respect and allowed to act as regent, and also given the option to maintain living in the country, even though the monarchy had been abolished for periods of time. So that says, I think, quite a lot about her character and the way she really embraced Greek culture and the Greek people embraced her.
Yes.
So I think let's move on to the next slide, where we can see one of the jewels that Olga brought to Greece was these magnificent cabochon emeralds.
Yes, I would class these as sort of the main Greek crown jewels. So these were brought to Russia by Olga in 1867 when she did marry King George. I personally think they were a gift from one of her childless aunts, but they are very impressive. Initially, she had them, they were loose stones, as you can see on the far left. They were, you know, brooches, necklace pendants. They were pinned to her Russian headdress, which is known as the Kokoshnik. And yeah, these emeralds were designated the best suite, and were to go to her eldest son, King Constantine I.
Yes, she gave them as a gift to her eldest son, King Constantine I, for his silver anniversary in January of 1913, just a few months before King George was assassinated. But what is very interesting is that Olga actually had these reset by Cartier in Paris, and she told her youngest son, Prince Christopher, to bring them to her in Greece. Prince Christopher had them in his luggage all the way to Rome, where he deposited them in the hotel safe. And then he promptly forgot all about the emeralds, met up with a couple of friends, and it was only when he arrived in Athens that he remembered, oh no, I've left the emeralds back in the hotel in Rome.
Yeah, that
So he had.
Must be nice to forget that kind of thing.
Definitely, yeah, no. And then he had to go and send a valet back to Rome. And he remembers, I think his main thing was that the thing he most regretted was the cost of the first class ticket to send the valet back and the gold watch he had to give him to perform the service. But Queen Olga was none the wiser.
Yeah, but can you imagine what it would have cost him if she'd found out what he'd done?
And Prince Christopher did actually borrow one of the emeralds from his mother once and wore them on his hat, where when one of his sister-in-laws was admiring it, it fell off from his hat and rolled on the floor, but by a miracle landed on a carpet. So it did not crack, which emeralds are very prone to do, and we would have been lost such magnificent piece of jewelry.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, so Prince, so as we said, King George and Queen Olga had six children in total. The daughters married back into Russia. We had King Constantine I, who was the heir. We had the second son, who married one of the Bonapartes, married into quite a fortune, and was able to help out during their numerous exiles. Then we had Prince Nicholas. Was he next?
Yes.
I always get
Prince
him and
Nicholas.
Andrew confused.
Yes. So those were number three, and then Andrew was number four.
Andrew was number four. So Prince Nicholas had three beautiful daughters, as we mentioned at the memorial service for King Constantine. That's where the Kents descend from. Prince Nicholas's daughter, Princess Marina, married George, Duke of Kent, and that's where that branch of the British royal family come from. And then we had another of his daughters married into the Yugoslavian royals, lovely jewels as well, and the middle child, Elizabeth, married into the, can I pronounce it right? Turing? Poiring?
Who were a very wealthy noble family in Bavaria.
Yep. And then we had possibly the most important one for the British royal family was Prince Andrew, as we said, Prince Andrea in Greek. Four daughters he had with Princess Alice of Battenberg. And lastly, one son, who we all know went on to become Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, husband of the late Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
And then the lovely little Prince Christo, he was last. And amazingly, his son is still alive today, Prince Michael of Greece.
Which is absolutely amazing, given it's been almost 2 centuries since the birth of his grandparents.
Exactly. It's amazing. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Wonderful. And we'll get to these more in detail later on. But I think in the side that we just missed, we can talk about Olga's rubies, which, so she did inherit all those Romanov jewels, but these rubies were actually one of those gifts that Queen Olga accumulated over the years from rubies that had been given to her by King George on special occasions like birthdays and anniversaries, and eventually formed this magnificent pearl, which I think, speaking of both, was Sam and I's really favorite jewel, not just in the Greek royal family, but of all the royal families.
Yeah, I do love this set. Love to study it. Hint, hint, anyone listening. No, it's a perfect set. I mean, it's a beautiful tiara. beautiful necklace, earrings. The rubies are fantastic. They're very rare colored. They're called pigeon's blood. Don't ask me why. But yeah, it's a gorgeous set. And the fact that we still have them and they're worn today is fantastic.
It is. And these are, I think, just like not only are this like an emblematic example of Greek design as given the laurel wreath and all that, but they're absolutely just like attractive jewels. And given their history and all of that, it's amazing that they're still worn.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably one of those sets that actually drew me into historical royal jewelries, because you can just see it being worn through the centuries and the decades, and it's still worn today, so.
No, it's amazing. And I think let's move on to the next slide, where we can discuss kind of the turbulent era of the Greek royal family, which came after King George I was assassinated in 1913.
Yeah, very sad. Despite ruling for 50 years, starting a dynasty, marrying everyone off in different directions into different royal houses, King George was assassinated sort of after he won the Balkan Wars, and that led to his eldest son, King Constantine, becoming king. And unfortunately, well, King Constantine got married to the Kaiser Wilhelm's sister, Queen Sophie, who was also a granddaughter of Queen Victoria. And as much as they had a happy relationship and five children together, or six, five, five or six. Yep, so they had six children together. But sadly, it was to cause a lot of problems in the future.
Yes, it did, unfortunately. Even though their children included three kings and two queens, that marriage was, from a dynastic point of view, quite unsuccessful because it brought the ire of the Allies onto Greece during the First World War, and the only person they blamed for Greek neutrality was Queen Sophie. Okay, so in 1917, the Greek royal family were first into their first exile. King Constantine was in the midst of the First World War, made to abdicate the throne, and the royal family all went into exile in Switzerland. And in place of King Constantine, ordinarily his eldest son, Prince George, would have become king, but he was also thought to be too pro-German. So instead, they chose his second son, Prince Alexander, and made him a puppet king in the hands of the Greek prime minister at the time, who was very much controlled by the British and the French governments. So it was quite a tragic situation because for 3 years they were unable to communicate with Alexander. He was more or less under house arrest. He was able to travel around, but he wasn't allowed any contact with his family. Even phone calls were not allowed. So it was quite a tragic time for the royal family where they were apart and a young king was unable to kind of have the support of his family at the time, despite all the pressures of being head of state.
Yes, and another tragedy was to follow. Poor Alexander had fallen in love with a Greek, sort of minor Greek noble, Aspasias Manos.
Who was one of his childhood friends, and so they naturally fell in love together.
They naturally fell in love, and she was one of the few people that were permitted to stay with the king. They wanted to get married, but she wasn't considered of high enough social standing, and obviously the political situation at the time, it was worried that, if they were to have a child, it would affect sort of the dynasty. But they were determined to get married. They did eventually in secret. They were supposed to obviously live happily ever after, but sadly, King Alexander died. He was walking in Tatoi, which was the royal palace just outside of Athens, and he was bitten by a monkey. And unfortunately, in those days, there was no penicillin, and there was nothing they could really do, and no one was willing to cut his leg off. And the poor young man died of blood poisoning,
And
leaving behind a pregnant widow.
none of his family were able to be allowed back into Greece in time to see him on his deathbed. Queen Olga was the only one given permission, but even she arrived too late. And then there was a dynastic crisis because his widow was pregnant, and there was a big kind of political vacuum. There was a war going on with Turkey. And Queen Olga acted as regent for a couple of months until the Greek parliament voted to bring back King Constantine. And he made it quite a triumphant return in 1921. And then that same year, he married off his two children into the Romanian royal family. So Prince George married, Crown Prince George married Princess Elizabeth of Romania. And then Princess Helen married the Crown Prince of Romania, so Carol. It was quite a nice time for the royal family, but it was unfortunately very short-lived because over just a year later, King Constantine was again forced back into exile and abdicated this time in favor of George, who became king. But it was a very still politically turbulent situation with the Greco-Turk Turkish War going on, and it really made the situation very difficult for the royal family. Up to the point in 1923, I believe, when King George II was forced again into exile, this time for almost a much longer period. And it kind of was the beginning of the long exiles to the Greek royal family, which more or less continued to this day.
Yeah, it's very as you can probably tell from listening to this, very complicated history, very contentious political situation. I believe during something during the 30s they had something like 13 different dictatorships, a couple of governments, and military rule, and it's just a
It was
big
very
back and forth.
yeah, I believe in between 1923 and 1935, when they brought King George back in, they had around 25 different sorts of governments that came and were toppled. So it was within a decade, it was quite a turbulent period. And then the powers that be decided maybe it's probably a good idea to have
It
King
was
back again.
so complicated. They went, "We need a king. We need a king back."
Because for better or worse, it did have a stabilizing effect.
Yeah. So George was able to return in 1938, I
Five.
believe. 35.
At the end of 1935, he was living in Claridge's in London, and they asked him to come back. And he came back. His wife, Queen Elizabeth, had decided to divorce shortly before because she did not want to be queen. They had been separated for quite a long time at this point. And then his heir was his brother, Crown Prince Paul, whose marriage we'll discuss in a bit. But George ruled initially for 5 years again. In 1940, when the Nazis invaded Greece, they had to flee again. It was quite a kind of dramatic escape. They fled to Crete, and then from there to Egypt and South Africa, and then to London, where King George formed a government exile. And he kind of remained that way until 1946, when there was a civil war in Greece. And again, he was voted back in. King George arrived in, I believe, October of 1946 to massive crowds and a very awful political crisis. And then he passed away just a few months later, quite suddenly, which was quite a shock for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it was unfortunately this particular time. Obviously, Greece had a very rough time during World War II, and then followed on with another civil war that is going to have knock-on effects in the later story of the Greek royal family.
Definitely. So King George was succeeded by his younger brother, the third brother to become king, who was King Paul. And he is actually the only one of the Greek kings who's neither assassinated nor killed or exiled during his reign. So there's some victory to be held there. But it's his story is very much of there being different kind of political crises in Spain, but King Paul himself was a very dynamic figure, so he was able to control a lot of the kind of turmoil and the different political factions, and more or less have some sort of stability for the next dec 2 decades or so.
So the 1950s were pretty much the Greek royal family trying to get back on an even keel, trying to rebuild the government and the society of Greece after the wars. Queen Federica was very heavily involved in not just charity, but she also organized what they called the Cruise of Kings, which was where
Yes.
she brought together all the royal fam, well, most of the royal families of Europe, all the cousins, for these glamorous cruises around the Greek Isles to promote tourism. And in doing so, it brought a lot of good press to Greece, a lot of attention. So
Definitely. And I think now this is the perfect time to talk about all the royal cousins that came to Greece in those years. And the Greek royal family became quite well known in the international press for all these big royal gatherings that they held, which were mostly family gatherings. So right over here, you can see in the middle in white, Queen Frederica, standing before her is King Paul. Beside them are the King and Queen of Denmark, who we'll see figure very importantly later in the story because their youngest daughter, Anne Marie, married the next king of Greece, Constantine. So the Danish royal family had the historical tie, and then it came full circle a century later when the Greek crown prince decided to marry a Danish princess.
But that's not before Princess Sophia married into the Spanish royal family, even though they were in exile.
As we'll discuss in a bit, but beside Queen Ingrid, there is Queen Helen of Romania, who was King Paul's sister. Beside her is Princess Catherine, who was the youngest sister, and she married into a British gentry family. So she was dynastically unimportant, but I think she had the most stable life out of all of them. Beside her is Princess Theodora, the Margravine of Baden, who was one of the sisters of the Duke of Edinburgh. And on the other end is their fourth sister, Princess Sophie, who married into first the Hesse royal family and then the Hanoverian royal family. And above Princess Theodora, you can see her husband, Prince George William of Hanover, who was the brother of Queen Frederica. So that was...
Who that was.
Yeah, so it's Prince Michael and then Prince George William. And then on the other side, opposite end, you can see Princess Margarita of Hohenlohe-Langeburg, who was the eldest sister of the Duke of Edinburgh. And beside her is her cousin, Princess Eugenie of Greece, who was the daughter of Marie Bonaparte and Prince George, so the second son of Olga and King George. And then beside her, I believe, is Princess Irene, the Duchess of Aosta, who was a short-lived Queen of Croatia during the Second World War. So
yes, and she's the mother. Well, she married into the a branch of the Italian royal family.
Yes, and then beside her is Princess Olga of Yugoslavia, whose husband was the regent of Yugoslavia for most of the 30s, and she was the sister of Princess Marina, Duchess of Kent. But you can see over here on the back row we have Princess Sophie, who became Queen of Spain, and then on the edge over there is Princess Alice, who's the mother of the Duke of Edinburgh, and she's, I think, these days one of the more well-known members of the Greek royal families, especially for an international audience.
Yes. Her portrayal in the crowd wasn't completely accurate, but it wasn't far off.
Yeah, I think out of all the inaccurate portrayals they had, that was actually one of the better ones.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I think let's move on to the next slide where we can see so all these characters that we just described. And then this is a gala they held to celebrate the Greek monarchy centenary in 1963, which marked the centenary of the arrival of King George into Greece. And this was, I think, one of the bigger royal gatherings they had during the 60s, but one that brought together the two dynasties of Greece and Denmark, which are... is going to feature very prominently later on. But then in the next slide, you can see 2 years before that, this is another gala that they held during the ceremonies. It was quite a glittering celebration. And ordinarily, I believe we would have seen the Duke of Edinburgh at this event as well. But I was doing some research and I found out that he and the Queen were on a 2-month tour of New Zealand and Australia. So that's probably why he wasn't there.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, and then let's move on to the next slide where we can see King Paul's 60th birthday celebration in Athens, which again brought together not only all the different royal relatives from around Europe, you can spot Princess Marina this time behind the king, but also a bunch of kind of guests from abroad, like the Spanish royal family. We have the Dutch on the top right corner there. So Greece really became a sort of convening place for European royalty. And as we'll see later on, that's a role that King Constantine continued during his, not only his reign, but also in his years of exile. And it was a place for their kind of family occasions. It became places for European and international royalty to get together and kind of get to know each other on a very much more intimate scale.
Very much so.
Yeah, so let's move on over here to see which was the biggest royal gathering held in Greece was the wedding of Princess Sophia to the now King Juan Carlos of Spain. The Spanish royal family were exiled at the time, but this was a dynastic marriage, unlike Europe had seen for several decades at this point. And it was just a magnificent celebration with kings and queens and hundreds of royals and nobles from around Europe gathering, filling up all the hotels. I think they even hired a couple of ship yachts in the harbor in Athens just to house all the VIPs there.
Yeah, I believe the Spanish royalists in Spain actually had their own yacht, and they took it along. And when the Spanish royal family found out, they put on a dinner for them off the boat. They were like, "No, come on, it's all right, cool."
So no, it was, I think this sort of royal wedding is, no royal wedding is held on this sort of scale anymore, but that
Yeah.
was just a magnificent celebration.
Yeah, that was fantastic. So that was another branch of the European royals that the Greeks managed to get into. Yeah, and obviously after this happened in the 1975, the Spanish royal family were actually reinstated. So yeah, from it was pretty good. She bet on the right prince.
Definitely did, because though at that point there was no kind of guarantee that Juan Carlos would ever become king.
Yeah, so she was taking a big risk, Sophia, but it paid off in the end because now her son is the king of Spain and her granddaughter will be the first reigning queen for nearly 200 years.
Yes, so I think it was a very good decision on Frederica's part.
Oh yeah, sorry. For those of you who don't know, Frederica was behind this.
Of course she was. Those cruises, they had some sort of
Yeah, they had a purpose.
they did. I think let's move on to the next slide where we can see that King Paul passed away in 1964, 60 years ago this month. And just a few months later, the new King Constantine, who was 24 years old, married the 18-year-old Princess Anne Marie of Denmark. And that itself was an absolutely massive royal gathering. So over
Yeah.
here, just a glimpse of it. He's walking down the stairs with Anne Marie and his mother Frederica. Behind them are the King and Queen of Denmark with the Queen of Thailand. Then you have the King of Sweden, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands, the King of Norway. And behind them, they had the King of Thailand, the King of Jordan, the King of Belgium. It was really one of the biggest royal gatherings Europe had in the 20th century.
Yeah, and I don't think you could beat that one, could you? I
Really.
mean,
And
I think this may have been like the last of the great royal weddings, you know, the types that were preceded by galas and tiara events and
definitely, yeah. Spain's tried, but nothing can match up the skill. And if you go to the next slide, you'll see just a glimpse of some more of the wedding guests, which really did, like, these are just the sovereign guests in the first couple of rows, and all of these people were kings and queens. So it was on a scale that is more or less unimaginable for us today.
Yeah, definitely the last swan song of European royalty, I think.
And if we go to the next slide, we'll get a glimpse into the cathedral in Athens. And just like an example of the scale of royalty there, the attendants included the crown princes of Norway, Sweden, Yugoslavia, and the Prince of Wales. And there was Princess Anne there, Princess Christina of Sweden. I believe a couple of the Dutch princesses were also part of the bridal party. So it was on a scale that, like we've been saying, like has not been seen ever since.
Yeah, and they were a beautiful young couple, and it was felt that this marriage would be a new start for Greece, start of the new era. And they were very photographed throughout the world, really. They became internationally renowned. But yeah, like all things Greek, it wasn't meant to be.
Unfortunately, yes. As you can see, behind the king and queen here, we can spot a glimpse of Queen Frederica and her kind of role in Greek politics during the 50s and 60s had made her quite an unpopular figure, and that unpopularity really rubbed off on King Constantine.
It really did. Not, just from what I've read personally, it would seem that Constantine, being quite a young king as well, and obviously loving his mother, took her advice. And as I said previously, because I don't think we mentioned this, Queen Frederica was a German princess. She was initially known as Frederica of Hanover, and in her youth, like everyone in Germany at the time, she was a member of the Hitler Youth. So obviously when she got to Greece, and Greece had had a very bad time during World War II, the fact that she was a German and the fact that she had that past didn't help at all. And it really cast a shadow over her reputation, just as it did when Queen Sophia in World War I was the Kaiser's sister. Foreign princesses are subject to prejudice when they marry into royal families. So that was her reputation, unfortunately.
So by 1967, around 4 years into King Constantine's reign, the political situation had gone pretty bad in Greece. And I believe in May, a group of Greek colonels did a massive coup. They kicked out the democratic government and installed themselves in power with what they publicly claimed was the support of the king, and what King Constantine said that he had no idea and he was kind of blindsided by it.
Yeah, and he's sort of claimed that he was more or less held hostage, which he might have been, by this new military. And Queen Anne Marie at the time was pregnant with her second child, who turned out he was born a few months later, Crown Prince Pavlos. So they were a sort of a scared young couple with young children, being held to ransom by these a military dictatorship.
And then throughout the next few months, Constantine tried to kind of create a counter coup and brought together different elements of the resistance. He made a trip to the United States where he met with the president, but ultimately all of that proved unsuccessful, and the coup was such a disaster that at the end of the year they had to flee Greece into exile in Rome, where Anne Marie had a miscarriage, and they were in a pretty kind of weird limbo situation for the next couple of years living in Rome.
And again, like similar to what happened during the 30s, they had the military dictatorships, and then they had changes of government, and then by 1973 they were still in exile, but a new democratic party had come to power, and they had promised to hold a referendum on the continuation of the Greek monarchy, because despite being in exile, and this will be very important later, King Constantine never abdicated. He always maintained that he was the King of Greece.
And legally, until 1973, internationally recognized, he was still the King of Greece, even though he did not wasn't allowed to enter Greece.
Yes,
But
and he was still paying tax on his Greek properties. And he still had Greek citizenship up to that point. But sadly, the government may not have been as forthcoming with the Greek royal family as they would have liked. Constantine wasn't allowed to campaign in Greece. And obviously, it had been many years since he had been known to the Greek people. So they'd pretty much all but forgotten him. So obviously, when the referendum did come around, it was voted to abolish the Greek monarchy in 1973.
yes, and that is if you even consider the results of the referendum proper and not rigged,
Not
as
rigged,
Constantine,
yeah.
which, given the state of Greek politics, it would not surprise me if it was quite rigged. But
Yeah, so that was that.
Yeah.
And Constantine and Anne Marie decided to take their three children at the time. Prince Nicholas had been born in Rome during their exile, and they moved to London. They moved just outside of London. And they continued with a sort of a semblance of royal life.
Yes, as you can see in the next slide, that through the next 4 decades that they resided in London, Constantine and Anne Marie were still very active in the royal scene. And they, in a sense, became kind of like how the Greek royal events of the 50s and 60s used to bring royalty together. Their family events in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s brought royalty from around Europe together in London or in Denmark and other places to attend their family occasions, which really was part of King Constantine's power as the former monarch, that he was able to do all these things. And it really became a networking event in a sense.
It really did. And it was more, you know, it was more of a soft power from Constantine, considering, yeah, like we say, the connections that he had, and they were family connections. They were all cousins, all related. So why wouldn't they attend these important events?
Exactly. As you can see in this slide here, we have Constantine and Anne-Marie in the center here at the king's 50th birthday celebration. On the left-hand side, you have the queen and the Duke of Edinburgh. The Duke of Edinburgh and Constantine's father were first cousins. Then Prince Charles was a very good friend of Constantine during this period. You have underneath them is Queen Sonia of Norway with her daughter, Princess Martha Louise. And Sonia's husband was a cousin of Anne Marie and also of Constantine, but a bit more distantly related. Then you have the Kents underneath, whose mother was a Greek princess. You have King Michael of Romania, who was the first cousin of Constantine. And on the opposite side, you have Queen Ingrid of Denmark, who was Constantine's mother-in-law and Anne Marie's mother. They have the King Queen of Spain, who was his sister, Empress Farah of Iran, who were a great friend, and Queen Margaret of Denmark, who was Anne Marie's sister. Then you have the King of Sweden, who was Anne Marie's cousin, and the Grand Duke and Duchess of Luxembourg, who were also related through King Christian.
Yeah, so like we say, as much as they were royal gatherings, they were very much familial.
Definitely. And then if you move on to the next slides, that in the next generation, they have been very keen to continue these links, because you see up top, is there was a massive royal gathering in London for the wedding of Crown Prince Pavlos and Marie Chantal. And when their eldest son, Prince Constantine Alexios, was christened in 1999, they chose the heads of royals from around Europe as godparents, including the now Prince of Wales, there's Crown Princess Victoria of Sweden, the King of Denmark, the King of Spain. You have Prince Dmitry of Yugoslavia, and also his uncle Prince Nicholas of Greece.
Yeah, so they are continuing going forward the tradition of making sure that they are sort of front and center, even though they're not reigning anymore. What year was Alexios christened?
1999, so 25 years ago.
Yeah, 25 years ago. And that's interesting because in 2001, another chapter of the Greek royal family history took place where I believe they were the socialist government of Greece decided to actually remove King Constantine's Greek citizenship. And in doing so, King Constantine took the Greek government to the European Human Rights Court in order to get it back.
Definitely. And I think that whole thing was really stripped off by a trip that the Greek royals took to Greece in the summer of 1993, when King Constantine and the royal family were all filmed for a documentary, I believe, with Sky. And they were shown traveling around Greece on a yacht, visiting Tatoi and a couple of other places. But the Greek government was so threatened by that they set a warship behind them. They had military planes patrolling them. And as a result of that, their property was confiscated. And it began with a series of kind of injustices that led to Constantine losing his Greek citizenship.
Yeah, and obviously he never abdicated his throne, but this particular pettiness by the Greek government definitely soured the last couple of years of his life. He was eventually able to return to Greece. Did he ever get his citizenship back?
I believe no, he and Anne Marie had a Danish diplomatic passport,
Yeah.
and that's what Pavlos and Marie Chantal have as well.
Yeah, but he did. It did eventually, I think. I
In
mean, he
2012, they moved back.
they did. So they did move back, and they did live as private citizens, on an island. Quite a, I don't know. Spets, this is remote, but it wasn't back in Athens.
Exactly.
And people say that it was some of the happiest years of Constantine's life because he was back in Greece.
Definitely. I think that's one of the things that King Constantine became more Greek than the Greeks at this point, that he was such a big kind of force of Greek culture and language and the Greek Orthodox Church around the globe, even during his years in exile, in foreign governments. He served on the International Olympic Committee. He had won an Olympic medal himself. So he was very much at the forefront of all these global institutions, despite not having a role as a reigning king.
Yes. So when his
As you
funeral did take place in Athens, it was again felt that the Greek government slighted Constantine by not giving him a state funeral.
Yes, I believe that too, because they have given state funerals to former prime ministers and presidents. And if they had done a very dignified thing and given a state funeral to King Constantine, as has been done to other former monarchs in the Balkans and other places, that would have really, I think, given much more kind of international support to the Greek government, and had they not been so petty in denying that sort of honor to him. But still, the way that all of the royal guests and the royal community pulled together to honor King Constantine was more or less unprecedented, because we had so many kings and queens right there from around the world gathering to honor King Constantine.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, but I think as we've covered in this episode, the history of Greece in the last 150 years has been so contentious, with so many different political coups and military, juntas, that I don't know. I personally feel that that now that King Constantine has gone, it's going to be a new chapter for the Greek royal family.
Definitely. And I think that we've seen so many examples of that even in the years since he's passed, because we saw Tatai Palace, which has really been the main residence of the Greek royal family for over a century, that has been taken over by the state, and after lying dilapidated for several years, decades at this point, it's being restored, and there have been quite a few personal items of the Greek royal family that have been found. But alongside that, there have been other items like the Greek crown jewels, which have been given by the Greek royal family to the Greek government in a sort of gesture of reconciliation, and to try to make things normal and maybe get their Greek citizenship and their identity back.
Yeah, so it will be interesting now. As I said, I think her curtain's closed, but I think a new, less contentious chapter is about to begin.
Definitely.
Obviously, Pavlos, Crown Prince Pavlos, and his wife, Crown Princess Marie Chantal, they don't reside in Greece as of yet. I think they are looking to go there. Prince Nicholas lives there with his wife, Princess Tatiana.
But then, without a role, there is no kind of purpose for them to reside in Greece in that sense.
There isn't.
So,
I hear Queen Anne Marie still has a flat in Athens.
yes, she does.
She does. So, yeah, as we've said, it would be interesting going forward what the new relationship will be like. Will they end up being like the former German royals after the war, where they were just treated as landowners, but they have no land, so that probably wouldn't work.
Or, I mean, it is, I think, on social media, the Greek government does feel threatened at times, because the comments are very defensive of them being Greek or not being Greek and having those titles, which is much more contentious than for former royals of other countries. So
Yeah.
I think the relationship is still very raw, but it's definitely headed off to a better spot than it has been.
Yeah, but You can't say this. The, you know, the ultimate triumph of the Greek royal family is the current King of England. King Charles III is a descendant of the Greek royals. So maybe
So
they've won in the end.
they really have. So it's been quite I think Sam and I have been planning this episode since King Constantine died, and the fact that it has taken us so long to do it is because it is such a kind of contentious history, but it is absolutely fascinating and so essential to kind of understanding the relationship between the royal families to know the situation of the Greek royal family and how they have developed and married into other royal houses and how they continue to kind of be a symbol of bring all those roles together again.
Yeah, and yeah, hopefully they can going forward have a better relationship with Greece.
That's wonderful. And I think that's a great way to end this episode today.
Yeah, finally. There we go.